Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Warning, this episode contains details that some listeners may find disturbing. The Nahanni National Park in Canada's Northwest Territories has an extreme and unforgiving mountain landscape. Hot sulfur springs produce a mist that hangs over deep canyons, making summer days feel tropical, while winters can drop to 50 below. The area is so remote that even today, only a few hundred people visit each year. In the early 20th century, this area was nicknamed the Valley of the Headless Men. Why? Because multiple people have been found killed with their heads removed. Legends circulate that the area is home to violent prehistoric beasts or giant wolves and spirits. The indigenous Dene people speak of a warlike mountain tribe, the Naha, who mysteriously vanished in the last century. If the legends are true, could the Naha have attacked to protect their land, or are stranger things afoot? This is a study of strange. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Michael May. Before I dive into the Headless Valley story, I just wanted to mention that at the end of this episode, I'm going to share a much more recent story from the area that is very odd and sad and strange and mysterious. And I wanted to add that because most of this tale takes place in the first half of the 20th century. And, well, the strangeness doesn't have seemed to have stopped in the Nahanni National Park. So stick around for that story. All right, here we go. The Headless Valley, or the Valley of the Headless Cadavers, or the Valley of the Headless Men, is formerly known as the Nahanni National Park Reserve in Canada's Northwest Territories. It is extremely remote, and a very large area at that, at over 11,000 square miles. The place is breathtaking. I encourage everybody to look up photos and videos. It's surreal. It looks like it's right out of a fantasy novel. It's also a UNESCO World Heritage Site and visited only by those with the skills and know-how to survive because it is ruthless. It's also an area that you have to obtain permits to travel into. European contact began in the late 1800s when fur traders set up posts along the Mackenzie River, which is east of Nahanni. However, the area is so vast that it wasn't really explored in depth by Western settlers until the early 20th century. And with that came the first two known headless victims. The story begins with Willie and Frank McLeod, prospectors who ventured from the Fort Laird or Fort Simpson area into the Nahanni Valley. Now, this area is very difficult to traverse. Today you have to take a float plane in, so back then it was just on the feet and up the river. And while the Yukon Gold Rush had started 8 years previously, most prospectors didn't dare trek into the Nahanni Valley. Willie and Frank saw this as a sign that they have a good chance to find a lot of gold in the valley. So they left in 1904. Some accounts say that they never returned, while others say that they found a little bit of gold, came home, said, hey, we found gold, there's probably more up there, so they ventured back in 1905 or 1906. Regardless of when they left, they took an associate with them named Robert Weir. And sure enough, none of the men ever came home. It was about 2 years later that Charlie McLeod, Willie and Frank's older brother, began a search. After trekking his way up the river into these steep, dangerous valleys, Charlie and his team eventually found the bones of Willie and Frank McLeod. Now, here's where some of the stories can differ. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the Edmonton Journal published in 1909. The finding of the bones of the McLeod boys, as told by their brother, reads like a tale from a book of fiction. McLeod was traveling with a party of prospectors about 150 miles up the Nahanni River, and one evening, after making camp, discovered a blazed tree under which was a pile of ashes, the last remnants of a campfire. From that time on, they followed directly on the old trail, and at each camping point found a blazed tree. When about 90 miles up the river, one of the men cut his foot, and the rest of the party pushed on. After this man dressed his wounds and caught up with the main party, he reported in the brush underneath a large tree he had found the skeletons of two men. Charlie McLeod immediately hit the back trail and in an hour's time came upon the remains. Investigation revealed the fact that the heads of the two men had been cut off. One of the skeletons had a breastbone shattered, and appearances indicated that the man had been shot with a rifle while reclining on a pile of blankets. Near the base of the tree were carved words which would have meant a fortune to the relatives of the men had they been able to decipher them. These words related to the location of some valuable mine, but the murderers had taken care not to only remove every article of value from their victims' clothes, but also to fell and blaze the tree in such a manner as to render most of the writing illegible. The body of Weir, the engineer with whom they traveled, however, was not to be found, and as to what has become of him is a matter of speculation. I'll be quick to point out, articles back then, I'm finding, especially in this like remote area, they contain a lot of speculation and honestly, ill-documented rumors, like the comments about a coded message carved in a tree that led to a place where there's likely a ton of gold, and yet no one could decipher it, yet they still know that it meant it led to gold. This reporting undoubtedly leads to folklore and rumors that there's a secret gold mine, which did in fact happen. While that's a fun story, that part of it all doesn't seem super realistic to me. But the report about discovering the bodies and how they found them, I think that's a valuable report because this story is told so soon after the McLeod bodies were found. When Charlie McLeod found the bodies and then reported back, the police did officially investigate, but not, I mean, there's not a lot they can do back then. And the official report is that the men starved to death and that animals, scavengers specifically, had moved the skulls, which is a valid theory because that does happen. A partial skeleton was later found downriver, and that could have been Weir, but it's never been confirmed. There are some obvious theories to this story, but I'm going to hold off on those because the McLeods were not the only headless victims in the area. In 1917, a Swiss prospector named Martin Jorgensen built a cabin in the valley, and he wrote home that he had struck gold and become rich. Before he could share this newfound wealth, his cabin burnt down. People that were coming out to work with him discovered the burnt cabin, and nearby was Jorgensen's body. Most shockingly, he had been decapitated. In 1927, an outlaw and part-time gold prospector named Yukon Fisher had fled police in the Yukon, and he was hiding in the Nahanni Valley. Other prospectors came across a burnt camp, and near it was the body of Yukon Fisher, and he too had been decapitated. 5 years later, in 1931, another prospector, Phil Powers, became the fifth headless corpse. His charred remains lay in the ashes of his cabin, and his skull was never found. Royal Canadian Mounted Police dismissed the case as a faulty stovepipe, but later writers argued that Powers had been murdered and his cabin deliberately burned. And then in 1945, authorities discovered a man wrapped in a sleeping bag beside a burnt tent. His head was also missing. And this man has never been identified. That makes six headless bodies, discovered in the Nahanni National Park, and records indicate that over 40 people have died or gone missing. But it's these six that give a certain unseen terror to the park. And news of these mysterious deaths spread around Canada. The Vancouver Sun in 1947 called the legend one of the few pieces of bona fide folklore that we have in Canada. A 1954 article noted that although 11 violent deaths were confirmed between 1905 and 1953, storytellers inflated the number to a mysterious 13. And as you can guess from the 11 violent deaths mentioned there, the headless victims are not the only part of this story. And to help us come up with some theories about what might have happened, I'll share some of the details of those other violent deaths. There was Angus Hall in 1928. He had ventured ahead of his party and was never seen again. In 1936, there was Joe Mulholland and Bill Appear, and their cabin was found burnt, and the men have never been found. Annie Lefert in 1926 became separated from her hunting party, and then months later, a hunter claimed to have seen her climbing a hill naked and deranged. And then a man named John O'Brien in the 1920s, he was a trapper, and he was found frozen by a campfire with a match in his hand. And in the modern era, there have been additional disappearances, and even airplanes being known to vanish in the region as well. All these might very well be explained by the natural dangers of a remote and extreme wilderness, but the headless bodies are different. So what is behind these headless deaths? Here are some of the common stories. The Nahanni Valley Monster, a creature that's Bigfoot-like and apparently has an interest in beheading and burning white men. There's also legends of giants that use the hot springs in the area to cook their meals. Native hunters through oral history also speak of creatures that match known prehistoric animals like mastodons and bear dogs. There's also stories of a giant wolf-like being in the valley. And lastly, the Naha, the vanished tribe that I mentioned in the intro to this episode. Oral history tells of the Naha and that they were similar to the Dene and that they spoke the same language. However, they were a very violent group. They allegedly lived in the Nahanni Mountains and they would descend down to the valley floor to hunt and would also fight to protect their homes. Then, according to oral history, the Naha seemingly up and vanished sometime during the last century, leaving literally nothing behind. Now, while the story of the Naha seems like that's just local folklore and legend, I think those kind of things usually have a kernel of truth. And that relates to my own personal working theory that I have about these headless deaths. I think a local tribe attacked prospectors. And there's a common MO in all of these attacks, even in some of those additional accounts I read that didn't involve people losing their heads, you might have noticed the common thread, and that's there's a lot of burnt cabins, burnt camps, and even in the McLeod story, there was a burned out tree near one of their campsites. And that tells me that this was likely done by man, meaning I think the Naha were real. And I think it's possibly a small group. It doesn't mean there's a, you know, a huge civilization up there, but a small community, a small protective group that used violence as self-protection. And this isn't unlike other things that we've heard about, like North Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean, or even groups in the Amazon. And in the early 1900s, along the Nahanni River, in this extremely remote area of the world, it's very likely that a small tribe saw these people coming up, they're trying to mine, they're trying to dig in the mountain, and they were attacked. And they also carried ammunition, food, and other things that might have been of interest to this small group. So that's my working theory. Some of the other theories involve some of these people, like the McLeods as an example, being murdered by somebody that wanted the gold that the McLeods had found. Although I will say, as much as there's legends that the McLeods had this rich gold mine, we actually don't know if that's true or not. That tends to be based on pure conjecture and just rumors spreading around. But that doesn't mean they weren't killed by somebody for their food, for their valuables that they had on them, maybe even some gold. And similar things could have happened to some of the other victims as well over the years, because there's no law. This is so remote. There's no local law force, and people can do very terrible things, as we all know. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the Nahanni National Park Reserve is a very odd place. So to end this episode today, I'm going to cover a more recent story that is very chilling. And this happened in 2005. David Horacy and Frederick Hardesty were friends from Fort Simpson, Northwest Territories in Canada. And on June 12th of that year, they visited a friend, Rod Gunderson, at his cabin in the national park. Rod left for a few days, and when he returned on the 16th, both men were missing, and things were left in a, quote, suspicious state. On June 27th, Horacy's body was found in a thick brush a few miles from the cabin, and then on July 8th, Hardesty's body was found in a river about 12 miles from the cabin. The deaths were ruled hypothermia for Horacy and drowning for Hardesty. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police said that there were no signs of foul play, while a searcher, a person who helped search for the bodies, said that he saw bullet shots left at the cabin. Well, what could have happened to these two men, who were both experienced outdoorsmen, by the way, to have one die by hypothermia and the other from drowning? There are many theories and ways to speculate about what happened to these two men. Some claim that the men got into a fight and chased each other into the woods before getting lost and hurt and succumbing to the elements. Others claim that something more sinister happened, like a person attacking and trying to rob them, or even a wild animal. But the reason I wanted to share that story shows that anything can happen, especially in a place as remote and strange as the Nahanni National Park. You've just listened to a study of strange. Consider helping us keep the lantern lit, illuminating the unexplained, by subscribing to our Substack. Just head to the support tab at astudyofstrange.com. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.